Welcome back to The Good, The Bad, and the WTF What They're Thinking. This is episode 40. We're 10 away from 50, which is pretty impressive, actually, if you really think about it.
It's impressive we're still doing it. We're still here.
We are still here. We're powering through. You can't give up now. You can't give up now. It's too late.
We're like Rocky Balboa. We just don't know how to quit.
Exactly. And eventually it gets good again, you know. Starts off great, a little bit shit, then it gets good again. Well, you know, maybe that's us. Who even knows? But this week is the last week of November. So we're moving into the Christmas period where we will have a change of schedule, of course. But before we talk about today's
Halloween movies.
Yeah, before we talk about today's movie, we'll talk about something that piqued our interest on Twitter. I'll throw it over to you, Pierre.
Yes, it's very interesting for anyone outside the UK. I don't know if you know the story of anyone inside the UK. I don't even know if you know the story, but it has been trending on Twitter recently. Twitter, that place we love to go. So a Conservative MP called Nick Fletcher came out with a real wild claim. Let's title it that way. So he reckons that because women, female actors are playing roles like Doctor Who, and they've been touted to play James Bond and you name it, he believes that this sort of direction in TV and movies is leading men to crime. He believes that because men don't have a positive role model, of which I always looked up to Doctor Who as a kid, you know that, that he believes that men are going to go in the wrong direction and they're only going to look at Peaky Blinders or seedy characters, seedy male characters as their role models, and thus they will go to crime. Now, it makes you wonder, are the crime rates higher right now? Because I'm pretty sure that men have always been going into crime, even when Doctor Who was a male.
Hey, we invented crime. Was a male.
We invented crime, damn it.
No, this is outrageous. I was listening to it and it sounded like he was forced to say it. Like it didn't. Like even he was unsure as he was saying it. But I was just reading on Twitter and some of the comments on Twitter. The top comment, I think it perfectly sums up this statement from Nick Fletcher, where it's when you're accustomed to privilege, equality feels like discrimination. And I genuinely think that is about as true as it gets, isn't it? Because that sums it up, doesn't it? So he's basically saying that the female leads in TV shows and movies are pushing men to crime because they're left with characters like Tom Shelby. Like there isn't any other male characters in the world of entertainment.
Like white males in the industry are really struggling at the moment.
Yeah,
I mean, think of all them white males that are not getting lead roles at Marvel and DC right now.
Where's their march, eh? Where's their march?
When are we going to have a male Thor? When are we going to have a male Iron Man?
A male Iron Man, did you say?
A male Iron Man.
this is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I feel like sometimes when MPs come out and say stuff, I sometimes feel like it's just a bit of a PR move on their part in terms of getting their name out there, because I'd never heard of this idiot until this video had surfaced. I try and pay as little attention to politicians as I humanly can, so the fact that he brought this to my attention is annoyed me already.
Have you ever seen the movie 12 Angry Men?
No, but they should make a remake, 12 Angry Women.
Well, there's a great scene in 12 Angry Men where Egg Beckley, who is this, like, he's the racist of the movie. Egg Begley doesn't like the guy going down because he's Hispanic. And there's a scene where he's ranting about the problem with Hispanics. And all of the other 11 actors, like, get up and they move away from him, shuffle away from him, stare at windows, stare at doorways, just basically walk away from him. I feel that they should have done this at the House of Parliament. They should all just like stood up and just like shuffled away and like looked at other things and just kind of like find a way to minimize his voice, because this guy is, I bet this guy really loved the 2016 Ghostbusters. I bet that he has that on his, that poster on his wall.
Yeah, I mean, he probably has many other posters on his wall that he wouldn't dare let us see anyway. But someone did bring out a graph to show the UK prison population from 2011 to 2020, and you can really notice the switch when Jodie Whittaker became Doctor Who, because
that was the turning point right there.
Big turning point for the male population in terms of prison. So in terms of thousands, it actually went down to 77,000 from 83,000. So yeah, interesting. Doesn't quite add up, does it? I feel like if you're going to come with a big statement like this, you're obviously going to go viral with it. So you better bring your facts. You better bring your stats. You better have something to fall back on. Otherwise, you are going to get absolutely blasted for it, and rightly so.
And don't you dare make an Austin Tina Powers now, because that will really piss him off.
That will piss him off good and proper. International Woman of Mystery.
Yep.
He will be fuming. Which is our movie this week, and it was chosen by you. So why don't you explain what the movie's about?
Yes. For anyone
Agadelic, who baby.
Hasn't been living on this world for too long, Austin Powers is a parody. It's a spoof on the James Bond movies of old. Actually, this movie kind of made James Bond go down more of a serious route, because they were just hitting them pretty hard that they decided, hey, we need to change direction and make Daniel Craig broody. That's yeah. the way forward. So
it was, a bit Powers... like, it was a bit like when Bo Selector ruined Craig David. It was kind of along those lines, wasn't it? You know,
he didn't come back for ages.
Yes, Bo Selector. Yeah, he came back a different man, didn't he? He came back a bit of a DJ.
Where's his Kestrel?
Exactly. What happened to Kez? Similar sort of thing. I didn't realize this movie actually had that much of an impact on James Bond. It was quite surprising to read.
I thought you were going
to
say Craig David.
No.
Let's talk about that.
No, I'm surprised this had much of an impact on James Bond as it did. But yeah, interesting. Do you know what? Even at the time when I first watched this as a kid, as stupid as I was, didn't know this was a parody of James Bond, really. Just thought
didn't
it was
even
just
know,
a stupid movie.
I didn't
movie.
Even know any of the references, no. No. Just thought it was another spy who was English. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Like, I thought Johnny English was more of a take on James Bond than this. But
yeah, that was pretty much on the nose, though, wasn't it? As it possibly could have been. So Austin Powers, to sum up the story, his arch nemesis, Dr. Evil, has decided to freeze himself cryogenically, and he gets thawed out in the year of 1997. Now, Austin Powers has decided to volunteer himself to be frozen as well, and to come out the same year that Dr. Evil comes out and to fight him. So this isn't that different from Paddington, really. This is another fish out of water story. This is a guy from the 60s coming to modern time, which was 20 years ago, to fight another man from the past. And it's a clash of cultures, this movie. And also, when you look at this movie, you think, you couldn't make this now. A lot of the jokes, you think, no. In 2021, a lot of these jokes will fall flat, which is why I'm eagerly curious to see how Austin Powers 4 will be made, because Austin Powers was not afraid to go to certain places, was it?
No, it was definitely a bit out there. I don't actually think it was as bad as you say. I think it aged a little bit better than I expected, because it's a spoof, isn't it, on James Bond. So, and when you look at it, James Bond probably aged worse than this.
Yeah, I would agree
really think about it. Because this is just a comedy twist on it, it's hard to take it too seriously in that sense. But this is a fun movie. This is such a fun movie, isn't it? This is one you
just
put on
gag after gag, isn't it? It's just how many gags can you? It's an hour and 35 minutes of just gags, and
just straight
actually,
gags. Yeah,
that's all I wanted. as funny as that. That's all I wanted. Did I have a story? Something about taking over the world, but it didn't really matter.
It took the piss out of James Bond stories, didn't it? Really?
Yeah.
let's just blow it up. Let's just have some nuclear weapons or something. It tried to have a story.
It's just, and what I'm surprised about is this movie, how much of the humor of this movie is my humor? Just watching it, I just thinking, this is my humor. This must be where I got my sense of humor. You know, the whole Swedish penis enlarger thing, that is just everything that I find funny.
That's not my bag, baby.
What about this book that says Swedish enlarger penis thing and me? In brackets, this is totally my bag, baby. And he still has it. I love that he still has it throughout the movie. It's not mine. I keep telling you.
This is some prank someone's playing on me.
Someone's having a joke at me.
He is good. You know, he's a great character, Austin Powers. He's up there, isn't he? When you think about some of the best, like you think about Zoolander, think about Austin Powers, like some of the most iconic characters. He's definitely up there. Is he up there with... Well, he would be up there with Ace Ventura. Ace Ventura...
I think he's better than Ace Ventura.
He's better. I've never been a massive Ace Ventura fan. That's a bit of a hot take for me. I'm not the biggest fan of Ace Ventura, but Austin Powers is funny. It's one of those ones as well. I feel like when you watch it, you almost don't want to enjoy it because you look at it, you go, this is stupid. Austin Powers is stupid. But when you watch it, you're like, it is funny. The same with Dr. Evil. Like, just another character who's just... brilliant, played by Mark Myers again.
The monologue again. How classic is that monologue?
That monologue is hilarious.
It's just ridiculous and funny at the same time. Even the fact they had to cut it abruptly, it makes you wonder how long that monologue would have gone on for if he was just allowed to just free flow that thing. And that's the beautiful thing of this, and it reminds you of Anchorman, that so much of this is improvisation. There's no... This is, you can tell the difference between scripted comedy and improvised comedy, and a lot of this feels improvised.
It does feel improvised. I mean, there are bits that are improvised, aren't there? Like I think it was Seth Green and Dr. Evil's shushing scene is completely improvised. It's funny how the character actually was born, wasn't it? It was a character that was born by Mike Myers when he was just randomly flirting with his wife at the time. In like an English accent, and she was cracking up laughing, and then that was how it was born. And did you read that Jim Carrey was originally going to play Dr. Evil?
I can't imagine that really. I just think Mike Myers, there's something about Mike Myers playing all the roles which just works. It's like Goldmember, where he plays four characters.
Yeah,
you can't imagine him not playing all four of those characters. There's something, this feels that. I'll talk about it later. I want to talk about Mike Myers' career a little bit because he's such an interesting comedic actor. I find like when you look at his movies, there's not a lot of great movies of his, but he has three big franchises.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of comedic actors, even the best comedic actors, that have three big franchises that they're the lead of.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. I think it's hard to carry a movie in that sense by playing the two biggest roles in the movie. But he does it excellently. He does it really well.
And this movie was huge as a kid. I forgot.
Massive.
Just like remembering from like having a recall of my memory, just trying to remember how big this movie was for kids my age. And how big this movie probably still is. And how quotable it is. People today, I still know people today that quote this movie. It just won't, not this movie in general, but all of them. But it's funny that you forget which ones came from which. Like the whole monologue, I thought was from Goldmember. The Fembots, I thought was from the second one. The bit where he gets trapped when he's trying to reverse the car out of the tunnel and he gets trapped. Yeah. I thought that was from another one. It's funny how, and all of them, like the whole, it wasn't on this one, which I thought it was, where they had the physical reference of something which is naughty, and they keep giving it the nicknames like Johnson and stuff like that. And It wasn't in this one. It was a big boy, but I thought it was going to be like, it looks like a massive cock, you know, and they just cut to the scene where someone else is saying cock, you know.
It is hilarious. It's a very, very, very quotable. Very quotable movie. And coming out in 1997 as well, I felt like it was, I don't know why I didn't think it was that old, but it is. It's a lot older than I remember, but it's just, it has aged brilliantly in terms of comedy value. It's still hilarious.
Absolutely. And I didn't even know Mini-Me wasn't in this one. I thought he was in all of them.
I thought he was as well. I thought he was as well. They all sort of merged into one, didn't they?
It's funny. I thought he was in all of them and Seth Green came in the second one. So, yeah, my timeline of Austin Powers is completely out.
Oh, same. Absolutely same. I was like, where's Mini-Me? I was thinking that when they said, while you were away, we used some of your sperm. I thought, oh, they made Mini-Me. And then it was Seth that came out. And I was like, oh.
I love you. I love you.
It's that classic moment as well. It's like, you disappear all this time and now you want to come back into my life. I hate you. It's that stupid, generic sort of shit you get movies.
it's just so quotable. And for me, I want to share one of my favorite scenes. It's the most ridiculous scene, but they just went there, and I was just so proud they went there, not only once but twice. It's the scene where the evil henchman screams stop from far away as Austin drives over him very slowly with the steamroller. And then it cuts to his wife, played by a former Bond girl, Lois Charles, who gets a phone call that her husband has been killed. Yes, my husband's a henchman for Dr. Evil. And then her son comes in and he says, sit down, I've got to tell you about your stepdad. He's like, what? You know how close I was to him after my father died? And it's just it just completely goes there. And I just love the bit at the end where she goes, no one knows how difficult it is for an evil henchman's family. Yeah. It's completely true.
No, yeah. Yeah, all them characters that just get killed off so simply. Yeah, that is true. That was very very Family Guy-esque, wasn't it? You can see where they've drawn sort of inspiration from there, like those sort of things.
It was so Family Guy that I completely forgot that things like that existed before Family Guy.
Yeah, exactly. That was good. It just felt like this movie just had a bit of freedom. Like they were just in the writer's room, and then they were just like, "What if we like?" You can just tell they were just all pissing themselves. Like, what if we cut to the henchman's wife and all? You know, those sort of moments. They don't come off the top of
killed by sea bass. The other one.
Yeah. Those sort of moments, they come in the writer's room, don't they? They have to. They're so good. They're so good. But some of the names in this were stupid. A lot of vagina for one of my personal favorite. I also
again, it was riffing off fucking James Bond because they were terrible at stuff like that, like pussy galore and stuff like that.
Yeah, just it's completely taken the piss. Random task. Now we have to talk about Random Task.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The guy, Joe's son.
We have so much fun. Right,
hey,
now.
We can't ignore this. This is absolutely insane. I completely forgot about this as well. That Joe's son. He's in prison, isn't he? At the moment, he's doing 27 years at the moment. He was accused of rape and kidnap, wasn't he? Well, that happened in the 90s. So he was in this movie before they had pinned this crime on him, before the DNA sample that linked him to this happened. And then in prison he killed his cellmate. So now he's doing 27 years. So that is fucked up, isn't it? That is fucked.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? That something like that could you forget about stuff like that. You forget that actually some of these people in this film could be really dickheads in life.
If you had to say anyone would be the dickhead, he did seem like the one. He did seem like the one. Not a very likable character. But a direct parody of Oddjob.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's it. Well, his name, Oddjob, Random Task, is pretty much there.
It is good. It is good. It is good. That was a parody. They were not trying to hide at all.
There was no masking that at all, was there? Really?
Absolutely none. But yeah, this movie is just so fun, isn't it? It really is fun.
It makes me want to revisit the other two now and look forward to the fourth one.
Yeah, the fourth one, that could it happen? It's been discussed. I don't know if it is going to happen.
I think it will. I think this is such a money, machine that Austin Powers 4 coming out, because I had a thought about this, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I was thinking comedy franchises, right? They're not a lot of comedy franchises that are A, successful financially or critically, because it's hard to recapture that bottle, that thing that made the first one so successful.
Yeah.
Do you think Austin Powers is the best comedy franchise ever?
Ever? Ooh.
Because I had a little thought about it yesterday, and I really can't think of anything that comes close. I'm not saying Austin Powers is the best movie out of all of them, but what I'm saying is consistently, all of the movies are really good. I can't think of another franchise that is like that. I mean, you've got Anchorman. Anchorman's a better film than Austin Powers, but Anchorman 2's not. And this is what I mean. Same with Hangover. Hangover, good movie. 2 and 3, not really.
There's an argument to be said that Naked Gun is strong 1 to 3.
I don't know if it's as strong as Austin Powers, though. It's a good shout, but I don't think it's as strong as Austin Powers.
Yeah, maybe it isn't. I mean, the Naked Gun franchise is one of my favorites ever.
I thought National Lampoon's Vacation, but apart from another one. The original and the Christmas one, I mean, European Vacation is not that good. I've never seen the Las Vegas one. But again, they're not as consistent. So I really struggle to think.
Back to the Future isn't even as consistent either, is it?
I wouldn't even call it a comedy, though. It's more adventure, more action adventure with a light, like comedic touches here and there. But I wouldn't call it a comedy, no.
American Pie, another one.
Again, I mean, 1 and 2, 3.
Reunion is really good.
I like Reunion, but I don't know how positive they are. I mean, they are, when I go back to them, I love them, but is that because that's nostalgic for me? I don't know if anyone else would feel the same way, but I don't think it's, again, I don't think it's at the same level as Austin Powers. I don't hear anyone quote American Pie, really, ever. And back when we were kids, yeah, there was always American Pie references, but now, not really.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. You're probably right. It's definitely up there. I think that's another argument that could take place. But I'd probably back Naked Gun to be better.
I think Austin Powers. That's the one that just screams just successful. Again, Naked Gun. Do people really talk about it? Not really.
Well, that's what I like about it.
Yeah, but I mean successful. Not like personal favorite. I mean, I'm not saying Austin Powers is my personal favorite. I'm saying in the general consensus, is that the most successful franchise?
Yeah, I mean, commercially, Naked Gun made a lot of money. You can't forget that. It did make a lot of money. Would they ever? They can never do another one. And if they did try and reboot it with someone else involved, I would.
Oh my God, you just reminded me of something. You haven't seen the trailer for the reboot of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, have you?
No, that doesn't exist.
I saw that. It does exist. And I wish it didn't. Because again, like you said about that, no one can replace Will Smith.
Who is it?
I don't know him. It's weird. It's like a teaser and he's underwater and he like swims to a throne and a crown sits on his head.
Oh, that was from 2 years ago. Oh, Bel-Air.
Bel-Air, yes.
They always like to, whenever, do you know what, that's a pet hate of mine. Whenever they do like a a reboot or like a reimagination, they take like a little tiny bit, like they shorten the title down. They're just like, we're just going to make it cleaner. It's going to be called Bel Air. I don't like that. Like Joker. What about Fast and Furious? Furious. Do you know what I mean?
Surely they should have just called it Fresh.
Yeah,
Fresh would have been better than
Bel Air.
Yeah.
No, but the problem with that is you wouldn't have attributed it straight to Thingy. They would have had to call it Fresh Prince.
That's the other thing in the teaser. You know, the opening song, which is so iconic, he sort of words it. He words it in a more dramatic way. And it was too dramatic. And I was like, this is not Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That's this way too dramatic.
The new streaming service, Peacock, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on Peacock.
Have you seen the other rebooted TV show that is very much a classic that shouldn't be touched? And to be fair, like touching it and making it into something doesn't make any sense to me because it's just a title. There are a million shows that exist under this format, but because
Saved by the Bell, it's not anything new.
Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, I don't like.
They rebooted that. Why would they do that? There's so many shows that are like Saved by the Bell. They didn't need to take that name and tarnish
it. '80s. That movie's so '80s. I don't know how you can get away from it. That was the beautiful thing about it. It was too 80s.
No, not a fan. Not a fan that they've done that. But it's only, people in America would be like, that came out last year. Like, but for us over in the UK, it's the first time I've heard about it. And I'm not happy.
Cease on your reboot.
And desist. Cease and bloody desist. But yeah, Austin Powers. Fantastic movie. I do want to watch the other two. I may get around to watching the other two again because it is one of those films that I hadn't seen for a while, so it was good to see it again. And kind of like bits I forgot, you remember them and then you find them twice as funny just remembering them again. But yeah, the monologue was fantastic.
The monologue, the little visual innuendos throughout the whole thing. It's just brilliant. It's just gag after gag. There's rarely one that falls flat. There must be one, but I must have been forgiving because I never felt that anything did fall flat, so I must have been very forgiving of any such thing because it couldn't be that consistent. But overall, I was pleasantly charmed, and it is in my good list.
Yeah, it goes in my good list as well. I cannot deny. I cannot deny. I mean, it'd be a crime to put it in any other list, surely.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just going back to Mike Myers, because I was having a look at his filmography because I found it quite interesting to go back to the man. Because his filmography is up and down. So, you know, obviously the big breakout was Wayne's World, which I absolutely loved as a kid. It's one of the most rewatched comedies I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's one that I absolutely love. I put it on all the time. Wayne's World 2, pretty decent. He made a movie in between them two called So I Married an Axe Murderer, which is pretty decent. I like it. It's a pretty good film. And then he sort of doesn't do anything for a while. And then he does Austin Powers. So he goes from one big character, Wayne, to Austin Powers, and he starts doing that for a long period of time until we get to 2001, where then he gives us Shrek, another iconic character who spawned many sequels and is an iconic character.
And he's hit the jackpot with a few of these roles, hasn't he?
He really has, because his filmography isn't that big. 57 credits, and he started in 1975.
That's crazy. But he's one of those ones who's hit the jackpot on roles where some people would do that role and then never have to work again. He's done three of those. So his net worth must be absolutely insane, surely.
Yeah, he does like small roles in between. I mean, some of his didn't work out. The Cat in the Hat, The Love Guru, they fell flat.
Shocking.
But when you look at his career, he hasn't got a lot of movies there. Although there is something that he's doing with Netflix soon in post-production, which is a TV miniseries that he's involved in. I'm not really sure what that is, but he is a creator on the show, so maybe that'd be interesting to see. But yeah, when you look at his filmography, it's very minimal, but there's so much gold there. Like, even he's like cameos. He was in Inglourious Bastards. He's in Quentin Tarantino, and that is
a random, a really cameo.
Interesting cameo. He was in Bohemian Rhapsody, which obviously that Mike Myers and Bohemian Rhapsody are just forever linked after Wayne's World, aren't they? You can't think of one without the other. So the fact that they made a Freddie Mercury biopic and he's in it was just like a no-brainer.
Yeah, proper character acting in those. He's almost like in disguise, isn't he? In those movies, like Inglourious Basterds and that. He's almost like completely in disguise. But yeah, you gotta love that about him.
He's kind of a bit like Eddie Murphy in that regard, that he likes to get immersed into his characters. He likes to become his character. He likes to put the makeup on. He's not like, for example, as Seth Rogen, let's say, who Seth Rogen is Seth Rogen in every of his movies, or Adam Sandler. Mike Myers feels like Shrek, Wayne, and Austin Powers, and Dr. Evil even, feel like four separate characters. Don't feel like the same actor portraying them. I think that's quite interesting.
I agree. And like you say, him having the credits that he has, it kind of makes him a bit more... what's the word? Legendary, would you say? I think you get a bit of a legendary status if you work that way, I think. And if you can work that way, obviously, you got to, wouldn't you? You've got to, if you want to be a legend, like, you want to be, like, elusive in a way. Like, oh, yeah, you know, because he's not in a movie every year. He was never really in a movie every year, apart from when he was doing Austin Powers and Shrek and stuff like that. But then since, let's say, like, The Love Guru, he sort of disappeared. And only he's not really done any big roles since then, has he?
He's a hard one to sort of determine. Is he a success or is he a failure?
That was actually his last, like, main role, wasn't it? Like, last big role in terms of he was the main character was The Love Guru. Because after that, Shrek is a voice. We're not going to count that. And then after that, there isn't anything where he was the main... The main guy.
He failed. I mean, that was a gigantic flop.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely panned, that movie. And I don't know whether he kind of just stepped back and thought maybe he didn't, I don't know, were two flops, because obviously The Cat in the Hat was the one prior to that, which was a big flop as well.
Yeah.
So whether he kind of went, stepped back and tried to reevaluate himself and what he wanted to do, I don't know. Or whether he thought, you know, I don't need to. Maybe he's picky. Maybe he said, I don't need to search for work to live, because I've made quite a success. Because obviously he created Wayne's World. He created Austin Powers. He wrote the whole thing. So he's the creator. So he can kind of live off the wealth. And obviously Shrek must have been a massive money income anyway, because he must have had some sort of percentage on the toy sales. And that thing was a behemoth when it came out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I think Love Guru was the one that was, he was probably hoping was going to be his next one, his next big one, where he would see another two movies from him. And it didn't work out that way. It was a bit controversial. It was the humor probably wasn't the way he wanted it to be. It probably got portrayed in a completely different way. Probably offended a few people as well. So it was, it's a shame. And that was probably the point where he was like, okay, I've failed now. I've failed on this one. I'm not going to come back unless there's one that he probably believes in. Because he does strike me as someone who, like, when he creates a character, he goes all in on the character. And if it does well, then he'll probably spiral from there. But yeah, no, just The Love Guru just failed, and that was it. I remember when it first came out, and everyone hated it. So he's the opposite of Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler would do a movie that completely flops. No one likes it. The critics hate it. Gets all the Raspberry nominations. but then it would come back with another movie. Whereas Mike Myers probably a bit more like, nah.
And don't want what's flop. Funny about that is even his flops are still quite loved by Sandler fans.
He embraces it. Whereas probably Mike Myers probably took it probably a bit more to heart than maybe some actors would have. But he wanted it to be good, didn't he? I think sometimes some actors know that when they're doing shite, but it's going to sell. Whereas probably Mike Myers probably thought, actually, this is a movie I wanted this to succeed, and it didn't. That's probably why.
It'd be interesting to see him come back. It's been a long time. I'd like to see Mike Myers in a leading role.
Yeah, because I would.
We don't get much Mike Myers that you crave him more.
Yeah, yeah. You do. You do. He's just sort of living his life, isn't he, really? Just chilling.
Fair play to him.
And he's one of our own. He's one of our own.
Well, he's Canadian, but yes.
Well, we'll claim. We're claiming him. I think we're going to claim him. I'm going to claim him. I'll claim him. Yeah. Legend. Definitely legend. So one of the SNL come throughs as well. Anyone who came through SNL in that sort of golden era of the 80s and the 90s.
Same time as Sandler, didn't he?
Yeah, that school of SNL is unbelievable. When you think about it, that's like La Masia, you know, Barcelona, the academy of like comedians, isn't it? The SNL comedians, insane.
Yeah, there's so many great casts. Probably the first one was probably the best. It probably never got better than
that. Oh, 100%. 100%.
You think of Chevy Chase, Belushi, Bill Murray, Harold Ramis all coming out. That was probably like the pinnacle of them. And obviously they all got stolen from National Lampoons, but that's for another time we'll talk about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. But yeah, in the good.
In the good. And now we go to a top five. We're going back to a top five. No quizzes today. No brain teasers. Just a general kind of solid five. And obviously, our top five is always related to the movie we've watched. So I decided to keep this one quite simple, but actually, it was very hard to pick.
Yeah.
A top five comedic actors. Who are your top five comedic actors? Now, it can range. I don't think, are they comedians or are they just people that generally seem to be in comedies all the time? Are they leads or are they supporting? We've left it quite vague, because I think that's quite interesting to see what we're going for. So I have my five. I hope you have your five. And
I have my
start
five.
With your number five.
This is probably the hardest one to put in order, I'll be honest. And in my order, I'm not saying these are the best five of all time. I'm just saying this is purely my opinion.
It's like your boys' club. These are in your boys' club.
Yeah. It's hard to put these in order. And I wouldn't take too much from the order. But number five is Mr. Ben Stiller. Now, Ben Stiller is my number five because, I mean, when I think about classic comedy movies that I grew up watching, you know, Ben Stiller was a massive, massive part of that. And it's not just the movies where he's the main sort of guy. It's the movies like Dodgeball when he plays the main protagonist, villain. Zoolander, obviously one of the best characters ever. And it's also his little cameos and stuff like Anchorman and movies like that. And he's done a lot of movies. And you've got to ignore certain movies through the years, like Night at the Museum. Let's ignore that one. Let's not talk about that one. Starsky and Hutch. Let's not talk about that one either. Meet the Parents. Another fantastic movie.
Love it.
Really, really love that movie. The Cable Guy. He's in that.
Directed it too.
Exactly. That's the other thing you've got. He was in Happy Gilmore too, wasn't he? He played like his little cameo in that. It's just like his little actor cameos. Yeah, I always feel like whenever I see a little cameo from Ben Stiller, I know it's going to be good. Even his appearance in a Friends episode where he plays Rachel's new boyfriend who has like an anger problem, but she never gets to see it until the very end. So Ben Stiller.
It's a good choice. My number five was also hard because I had to pick between two people, and it was hard because I had my number five, and then suddenly this number five came in, and it was painful to knock out one. I'm not going to say who that person was, but I decided that my number five is Walter Matthau. Now, Walter Matthau, I love this guy, and it's kind of like you with Ben Stiller. He doesn't need to always be the lead. He rarely is the lead, but it's just great to see him in a movie that just makes you laugh. And even if the movie's not so great, like, I love him in, I mean, if I had to pick the three movies that I love him in the most, The Odd Couple, which is fantastic. To be honest, him with Jack Lemmon anytime is fantastic because they're great in The Fortune Cookie as well. And The Sunshine Boys, which is one of my favorite comedies. I quote this movie so much. It's just fantastic. He's always great when he's quibbing with someone. So he's quibbing with Jack Lemmon in Fortune Cookie or Odd Couple. He's quibbing with George Burns in The Sunshine Boys, or he's having the deal with Dennis and Dennis the Menace, who's just making his life a hell, or even when he's in serious roles, he's got this comedic stuff. I think he's the best at the one-liners. I don't think there's a better deadpan one-liner than him. I just think he's phenomenal, and he's just a personal favorite. I don't think you can go wrong with him, really, and that's why he's my number five.
That's a good choice. That's a good choice. My number four is someone we've spoken a lot about, and we will probably speak more about him in the future as well. It's Jim Carrey is my number four. We've talked at length about Jim Carrey, so I'll keep it short and sweet. Just some of the most iconic movies, obviously, that I've seen. And even when he delves into the more serious roles, you buy it. So he's just a phenomenal character actor, and he's synonymous with his sort of physical comedy as well. Like I've watched some of his early like stand-ups, as even those are just hilarious. And you can just see like the styles which he took from his own stand-up routine into sort of his acting career as well. He was unique at the time, and I still think he's unique now. So he's number four.
I've just made a live edit. I've just made a live edit right now, and I've put Jim Carrey at number four. He was number three for me, but I think between three and four, they're not that. There's not a lot of difference, so I put him at number four just to so we can talk about him a little bit more. He's the man with the rubber face. That's what he was known for.
Yeah,
he's got such a eccentric face. I mean, he can, the way he's like a contortionist, isn't he, with his face? The stuff he can do with it is incredible. I can't think of an actor, mainly a comedian actor, who has such a range of facial expressions the way he does. He can kind of morph his face to play anybody, which makes him great when they put him in makeup, like in The Grinch, because he can get completely lost. Even though you know it's Jim Carrey, you don't know it's Jim Carrey, if you know what I mean, because he doesn't look anything like him. And I think that's the great thing about him, is he's such a great contortionist. I think he, obviously, we talked about him in length before. He's had such an incredible career when you think of 1994, the infamous year of such classic comedies he made. It'd be nice to see a resurgence from him. That's what I'm really hoping for. I'd like to see Jim Carrey come back, kind of like with Mike Myers. I'd like to see him come back and give us something, and to remind us how great he was, because it does feel like it's been a long time.
It does. It does feel like it's been a long time, but he's going through some stuff, and he's got some things to clear up in his own head. So, I don't know if we will see him in the same sense that we've always seen him, because I think he's a bit more reserved in terms of his relationship with Hollywood. I think it's a bit frosty, his relationship with Hollywood. I don't think he's happy in that sense. So, but produced some of the best characters ever and some of the most iconic movies ever. So, fair play. Number three.
And your number three now, yeah.
My number three is Eddie Murphy.
Ditto. It's weird. He was going to be my number four, and I swapped him to number three. So there we go. How weird is that?
Eddie Murphy.
Let's talk about him.
Eddie Murphy. I mean, when you think about some of the movies Eddie Murphy's done, like you go. Well, in my childhood, I obviously skipped Raw. I never saw Raw before I saw one of his movies, but
which was so big. I mean, that was huge.
Fucking massive.
When you think about it, I don't think there's been a bigger stand up than Raw. When you hear Chris Rock talk about it, it's like he's talking about Elvis Presley. I mean, that's how important that stand up was for a lot of people.
It was crazy, that stand up, and it was a real piece of its time as well, because there are some jokes in there that, I mean, don't have to mention them, but people know there are jokes in there now that just won't slide. There are jokes in there that are just beyond the point of jokes, but at the time that was the place that it was at, wasn't it? That was the humor, that was the level of acceptance, and it was massive, wasn't it? Like, there's a lot of energy in it, and it's almost like a I was there type moment. So if you were in the crowd, then it was like seeing a Michael Jackson concert, you know, seeing Michael Jordan in his payday, that sort of thing. It was the absolute peak of a comedian, and that was just off the back of like doing Beverly Hills Cop, wasn't it, which was his biggest one, and then Trading Places as well, which is a fantastic movie. I didn't realize that was so early on in his acting career, Trading Places.
42 hours. Well, it's surprising that he was one of the youngest members of the SNL clan.
Yeah.
I think 42 hours. It's 42 hours, is it? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say the name wrong, which I absolutely love, even if I forgot if it was 42 or 43 hours.
I think it's 48, isn't it?
48 hours, sorry. Fuck me. Yeah, of course it makes more sense. Why would it be? Well, yeah, of course, 48 hours. I apologize. This is terrible of me. I think he was like 19 or 20 when he did that movie. And it's incredible how young he was when he rose to fame.
Yeah, it was. Because he's not that old now, really. Like, it feels like he should be a lot older considering how long he's been. He's 60. He's older than I thought. I thought he was 50.
He was 21 when he made 48 Hours.
That's
and
crazy.
Then he went to Trading Places the year after, another great movie. And then I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, the movie he made the same year as Beverly Hills Cop called Best Defense.
No, I don't think I did.
It's a really weird movie because it's a Dudley Moore movie, right? It was a Dudley Moore movie about, I think it's about a weapon, a weapon salesman, right?
Mm.
And they made this movie. The studio weren't too sure. So then they just brought in Eddie Murphy just to film some scenes in a tank. And just, Eddie Murphy's in the movie too, to see if they can kind of like get some more traction, because they weren't confident on this movie at all.
That is crazy. We've got to talk about his range as well. Like, this guy has got serious range in his acting career,
even before his serious stuff.
Yeah,
because if we talk about his range, there's two movies that I'd really like to discuss about his range, which are two weird movies to discuss, but I think they show his range. Coming to America, and one of my favorites, which I owned on VHS, and you know,
Nutty Professor.
The Nutty Professor, which I think is better than the original. But when I was a kid, I didn't know he played. Well, I knew he played some of them, but I didn't know he played all of them. I didn't know he played the aerobics instructor. I never knew that. and I found that out a couple of years ago, and I was surprised. Same in Coming to America, all characters he plays in that. There's some I never knew. He took it to bad extremes with Norbit, but even the best of us go a bad way. But Coming to America, huge movie. Nutty Professor, fantastic. He was in Shrek as well. There's a little bit of linkage there with our friend Mike Myers. Again, fantastic. His career is incredible.
Yeah, he's got a fantastic career. All these movies are brilliant. And they're iconic movies as well. I keep saying that word iconic, but it's definitely a subject for the actors we're talking about. Even like Dr. Doolittle.
Which we saw in cinema, I remember as a kid.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible.
Daddy Daycare, not a great movie, but he makes it worthwhile.
He does. It's got that status as well. But, Beverly Hills Cop, like, brilliant movies. But even like Vampire in Brooklyn. I've never seen it either. But like,
Wes Craven and Eddie Murphy, I mean.
Yeah.
That just screams, watch me.
It seems like such a random idea as well. It seems like one of those ideas that Eddie Murphy at this point in his career was probably just like, yeah, fuck it. Anything I'm doing is gold at the moment. I'm doing that as well.
Hence why he did The Golden Child.
There you go.
Again, a movie which is completely, was it the right thing? Was it not? I mean, there's so many of them kind of things that he did, but yeah, his career's up and down. There's some weird movies there, particularly in the latter part when he started to do more family stuff.
Of course.
But I think all in all, even the most mediocre Eddie Murphy movie is made better because Eddie Murphy is in it. And I think that's a credit to the man. I think he rose to fame very early on. And I mean, even now, I haven't seen the new Coming to America, but Dolomite Is My Name. Fantastic. I love that movie.
Now, I've not seen Dolomite Is My Name.
Great. It's on Netflix. You should see it.
But yeah, Coming to America 2. I haven't seen that either. And that was an Amazon Prime exclusive, wasn't it? Was it an Amazon Prime exclusive?
Yeah, it is on there. I haven't seen it either, but I love the first one. It's great. So
I'll belongs on the list.
Eventually. It's on the. You've always got a long list of movies that you say, I'm going to watch you eventually.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know when.
My number two. Yeah, my number two might be your number two. I'd be surprised if this guy's not on your list. Will Ferrell.
He isn't on my list.
Wow.
But
that feels like
two
a crime.
Very good. You haven't seen my number one and two yet, so.
I'm surprised. Will Ferrell, I mean, he's one of those actors who, when I first started watching him, it took him a while to grow on me because I was kind of like, I didn't realize how funny he actually is until I've seen him in so many roles now where he just carries a lot of movies. I mean, Anchorman was the one that was kind of like, bang, this is an iconic character he's created here. And just like even some of his bad movies that like I considered like average, like semi-pro, I love that movie so much. And I know that movie is not like a critic favorite, an audience favorite, but Jackie Moon, semi-pro, I fucking love that movie. I really do. Other movies
the
like The Other Guys.
Yeah, killed people in that in real life, didn't it?
I saw that documentary.
I've never seen Semi-Pro, but I've seen that documentary.
Semi-Pro is fantastic. I've never seen Semi-Pro. Semi-Pro is so good. I think it's better than its rating. It's one of those movies, ignore the ratings.
It's on that list.
That movie is, that holds up in my opinion. The Other Guys, brilliant. Obviously Zoolander, brilliant. You look towards more of the newer stuff that he's done. You like the Eurovision movie.
Not seen it. Can't comment.
Can't comment either, but it didn't seem that great. You got Holmes and Watson. Did that get that seem like that was a bit of a flopper as well?
I think that got a couple of Razzie nominations. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some great people involved in that as well. Like John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell, that seems like a winner on paper, but
how many times they've like come together, them two. It does seem that he's working a lot with John C. Reilly and Kevin Hart. That seems to be the two people he seems to be going with a lot.
He does. I just think it's impossible not to have him on the list. I do think that he is brilliant. When he's brilliant in a role, he is brilliant in a role, and he can make it iconic. he can make it really iconic. So, Will Ferrell number two. Who's your number two?
He wasn't consistent enough for me. That's the reason, maybe.
But I think that Anchorman was
I'm surprised he's as high as you put him. Over old school Anchorman, Jim Carrey and Eddie Murphy. I'm surprised.
I think you think comedy actors. I'm thinking like who really indulges themselves within a comedy role and a character role. And I would say he is 100% up there.
This is where my number two comes in.
Go on.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, but Charlie Chaplin just played Charlie Chaplin.
Well, I don't think Will Ferrell deviated that far from Will Ferrell, to be fair. But the reason I like Charlie Chaplin is because out of all the comedians or comic actors we've said at the moment, we've said they're more audio-based comedians. They're funny one-liners. They've got good quips. There's very few physical comedians out there who are almost like dancers, who are funny in the way that they move, that they orchestrate a scene through their body language or through getting hurt, falling over, being in peril. And I think Chaplin, there's nobody better than Chaplin. I keep bringing this movie up, Modern Times, because it's one of my favorites. But there's a scene in Modern Times where he's dancing, and every time he dances, he sort of lifts up his hat and turns it. It doesn't sound like a lot, but actually, when you see Chaplin do it, it's hilarious. It's funny. I can't think of anyone else doing something so basic, which is so funny. The scene that is copied so many times is where he has the forks in the potatoes and he dances with them. It's such an iconic scene. Again, you think, why is it so funny? But it's because Chaplin's doing it. And there's something about, he just understood physical comedy. And I really can't think of anyone who was at that level. And there's one, I can't remember if it's a movie or if it's a short, but there's a boxing match one that he had, and how that's orchestrated is just genius. The man was just a genius, and that's why he's my number two. He could have been higher, but I have a personal favorite number one, but I think Chaplin, I couldn't not put a list without Chaplin on it.
Do you know who I think could have been a great physical comedian who did a few movie roles and was great at the physical comedy? Did a TV show as well. Where he did a lot of physical comedy. Lee Evans, I think. If you watch the world of Lee Evans and you watch Mouse Hunt, Something About Mary, there was potential there because he was absolutely hilarious with that. That was all him. His was all physical. Same with Mr. Bean. It was kind of like Mr. Bean-esque, wasn't it? It was more funny visually than what was being said. But even in roles like the Something About Mary and Mouse Hunt, but he's brilliant in both those movies. So he could. I'm surprised he didn't. Maybe he didn't enjoy making movies because he kind of just stopped pretty early on, didn't he? And just stayed with comedy.
I don't think he was much of a film. I like him, but I think I like him because he's Lee Evans. If I didn't know Lee Evans, apart from the physical side of it, like he wasn't a charismatic presence on screen, was he?
Yeah,
physically he's brilliant, but that I think it's because we know he's Lee Evans. So you're like, oh, that's Lee Evans. You're sold on him because you know him and you like his stand up. But it's the same with some comedians can't translate well to cinema. And I think Lee Evans, he liked the stand up. He was really good at that. That was his domain, and I don't think he was good at going that other way, apart from when he could do physical stuff, and then he was very good at that.
I think his mistake was he kind of swayed away from that and went into like a serious, like some serious roles. He went into a movie called Freeze Frame, where he shaved off all his hair and all of his eyebrows. So he kind of went into like that serious realm, and maybe it didn't quite work, so maybe that was him bowing out and maybe didn't want to do those sort of movies be and just play him, himself, you know, play his stage presence in film. So maybe that was why, but I think
he
potential.
Went to American. I think he went to American. I think that was the problem. I think his humor is so British in a way that he should have made more British movies with his humor, where he went to like There's Something About Mary, which is probably the only movie really which fitted him. The Fifth Element, it's weird seeing him in The Fifth Element because I love the movie, but he's such a weird presence in that movie. It's like, why is Lee Evans in this movie? It makes no sense. Mouse Hunt, again, the idea, he's great. Him and Nathan Lane, surprisingly, are great together. But it's weird that he's in Mouse Hunt. It really doesn't make any sense. And that's the weirdest thing about his filmography is
it's surprising.
I don't understand
yeah.
how the hell any of this happened. It doesn't make any sense where someone went, that guy, we want him to be in all our movies. It's not, it doesn't really like add up, does it? There's some miscalculation somewhere.
And just maybe that's just what he wanted to do. Maybe that's just what he wanted to do. But he did a lot of theater stuff, didn't he? Did a lot of theater work. And I think that is his bread and butter. He is brilliant. He did The Producers, didn't he? He did another one called Endgame. That is his bread and butter.
There was one British movie he did with Kathy Burke, which I'd like to see again. That was quite good. I'm just trying to find what it was called now. I think it was called The Martins, maybe. Which I think is something about he lied about something or something or the other. He's also in a Jackie Chan movie as well. So yeah, he was in The Martins, which was about he was unemployed and he was still kind of like a man child and all of that. That seems like a good movie for him to be in.
Yeah, I'd love to see him make a comeback as well. I know he's retired now, isn't he, Lee Evans? But I'd fucking love to see him come back in some element. But
I'd love to see him do stand up. That's what I'd love to see.
Yeah, I would as well. I would as well. Yes, yeah, it's kind of a shame. It's kind of a shame he hasn't done any. He hasn't done stand up since 2014. Was his last one? Yeah. That's mad. He made a lot, and he made a lot of money doing so. He was selling out big theaters, wasn't he? They were big shows.
And I saw him live, and that was good.
We did see him live. Yeah, we saw him. Yeah, we did see him live. I remember that. Yeah, he came.
Might not have been his best performance, but it was still funny.
It was in the build up to one of his tours, wasn't it? What tour was that in the build up to? That was because I remember watching it in the end. I think it was Big. Or was it XL? Maybe it was XL. I'll know by the thing. I think it was XL. Yeah. Yeah. It was the XL tour. We saw that in Ipswich. And it was kind of him just like practicing his lines when he'd run back to his paper and like flick it and get his next joke and stuff like that. But that's sort of what they do when they're building up to these big moments. Just getting a feel for the jokes that are working and the ones that aren't working. But I thought it was more interesting to see that process as well as itself. Like I quite enjoyed that. And like when you're as big as him, I think you can get away with that. It doesn't look unprofessional running to a bit of paper because I think people appreciate how good you actually are. They're just like, oh yeah, fair.
Yeah, it was Ipswich. So it wasn't like he was, you know, we were coming to him. He was coming to us. We were coming to him.
Exactly.
And yeah, I think the one thing about his filmography, it's weird we're talking about Lee Evans because he's not in our top five. Well, he's not my number one. I don't think he's your number one. It's the one thing they never did in any of his movies, which is a big trait of his, which no one captured, is his sweat. The man sweated like nobody's ever sweated in their life.
But fair play. Fair play. He was a sweaty man, but that's a guy that still gets a bit nervous, I guess, when he goes on stage.
He was drenched, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that if you had to describe Lee Evans, it's just drenched. He's just like sweat patches everywhere and a towel. Just always patting his head because he's just covered in sweat.
And it became his sort of his trademark as well, didn't it? So
like George Burns had the cigar in the mouth, Lee Evans had the sweat in the towel.
Lee Evans had the sweat, yeah, exactly. But I think that's good enough. But we should move on to your number two. We don't have number two? We have.
It's your number one. I know what your number one is, so let's just get it out of the way, shall we?
Go on, who do you think my number one is?
We've done a ranking on your number one, I believe. Because I can't believe he wouldn't be in your top five, so he must be your number one.
Who is it?
Adam Sandler. Surely. No?
Not my top five.
Wow. I am surprised that Will Ferrell is higher than Adam Sandler for you.
Well, the reason being is when I think about Adam Sandler, it's the same with the reason why Seth Rogen isn't in this list. I love Seth Rogen movies. I love Adam Sandler movies, but it's not them playing the character that I love about the movie, because most of the time Adam Sandler's best movies are when he kind of just plays like just a random guy. You know, there's not really a character to it, but when when he does try and play too much of a character, I think it goes wrong. And they're mainly his worst movies, obviously apart from like Billy Madison. But every other movie, he's not really playing a character, is he? Like, he's not really playing a character in Big Daddy. He's just a guy in New York. You know, that's it. Now, my number one is my favorite deadpan comedy actor of all time. And we mentioned it earlier. It's Leslie Nielsen. Naked Gun and Airplane. When I think about those movies, they're the movies that crack me up every single time. All of those movies. The three Naked Guns.
He's a rival to Wilmer too. He's a rival in terms of the deadpan one-liner delivery, yes. He's a good rival.
Yes, I just love it. Airplane 2, absolutely loved, because they're so stupid. And like, he's a massive part of that. It's not so more... I mean, he played movies like Spy Hard and Mr. Magoo, which are also pretty funny movies. And he was a scary movie as well, wasn't he? He was played the president in a scary movie, and he was good in that. But the legendary status of Naked Gun, the timeless classic, in my opinion, of those movies. Frank Drebin, he is number one. And rest in peace as well, because he is a legend. He was he passed away. Sadly, I was quite sad actually. Quite sad that day, because he was a legend. Moment of silence for Leslie Nielsen. That's my number one.
My number one is also someone who is no longer with us, and that man is Robin Williams.
Mm.
It couldn't be a list without him. Again, when he passed away, it was probably one of the few times that I've generally been sad about a actor, famous person passing away. I've never, because you never know these people, it's hard to feel that connected, but he was such a presence through my whole life, this man, that you did feel like, wow, that's a big miss. And the reason why Robin Williams is number one is because out of everyone's humor that we put on this list, no one writes for Robin Williams. That's what I believe. Robin Williams goes there and they say to him, just do your thing. When you see him just do all these voices and go on these little crazy antics about stuff and just... There always seemed to be like a montage of him doing like different voices and different things. I mean, Aladdin, they just let him do whatever he wanted. And it worked so well that suddenly all these comedians started to go into Disney movies, Disney animated movies, I should say. Mrs. Doubtfire, I mean, what an incredible movie there. And again, he gets so lost in the makeup there, and the accent is so good that you can kind of get fooled that these are two separate people. Good Morning, yeah. Vietnam, which is even a drama movie, but again, he's so flamboyant in any of the time he's the radio DJ, and he's just being absolutely Robin Williams to 100%. Jumanji, again, not a massive comedic performance, but such a constant presence. And even his movies, when I was a kid, movies like Jack, which people shit on, I liked Jack as a kid, and I haven't seen it for a long time.
Don't watch it again. Just keep the memories.
I bet you I like it. I bet you I like it, because I've always liked Robin Williams. He's always been somebody that you just gravitate towards. And even when he's not the main star, like when you think of him in like a really small one credited scene in AI where he's just a voice, it just makes things better. He's such an interesting actor. He's also such an interesting human being. Even when you hear him on talk shows, he's just completely crazy. And he sort of managed to combine his talents without losing anything. So when he plays serious, when he plays comedy, he always plays Robin Williams. There always seems to be, not all the time, but there always seems to be a bit of here and there. You know, they always say Robin Williams isn't that far removed. That character is not that far removed.
Do you know what movie you can't,
like Dead Poets Society and stuff like that?
Yeah. Do you know what movie you can't? I don't know if you mentioned it. Apologies if you did, but you know what movie you can't forget about, which is a movie I've not seen for a long time, and I've just remembered it at this moment. Was Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams? What the fuck was that movie?
Such a weird movie. And that's the weird thing. He was in a lot of that movie, in like What Dreams May Come is another one where they're just like weird out there movies that you can't help but be drawn back to because it's Robin Williams.
It's the robot looking like him as well. That movie was fucking weird. I remember watching it, but I haven't revisited it since. That's gotta be one we revisit, isn't it? That seems like that's in the list of movies where we're like, that's a what the fuck of like,
yeah,
that's a what the fuck movie.
Even as a kid, I think, I don't even know if I like this movie. But it's Robin Williams.
That's about it, really, isn't it?
There's so many. I mean, The Fisher King, an incredible performance which he got nominated, where he just plays a crazed homeless man searching for the Holy Grail. Robin Williams. There's no way that you can't think of like, oh, that's a perfect Robin Williams performance. You brought up your number five in a Friends episode again. Robin Williams was in a Friends episode just being crazy. He's just a presence upon himself, and it is so sad that he isn't in movies anymore, that he's passed away, because I really don't think, in my personal opinion, I don't think there's going to be a comedic actor like him ever again that I'm so warm to, because he was just he was just inviting, whether you saw him on the big screen, on your small screen, or, you know, not even in a movie or TV show, just on the chat show, or whether you saw his stand-up, which was really good. He was just... The best way to describe his comedy is it's adrenaline. That's how I think of it. It's like an adrenaline shot, because it just hits you so fast. And there's so many jokes going on, and you just like pick out the ones that you can kind of, your memory can retain at the time. There's just so much going on. It's just absolutely in your face.
And he's been dead for seven years now.
Yeah.
Where's that time gone? Where has that time gone? That feels like a yesterday moment when he went, doesn't it? Yeah, he is. You're right. He's an absolute legend. And the way he went was extremely sad. Very, very sad. But yeah, like you say, legend. To be fair, it's a crime he's not in my top five, actually.
I'm surprised he isn't. I am really surprised. I went for like more people that we grew up watching, because that's how I thought this list.
I went for more like...
I'm surprised Adam Sandler wasn't there.
Well, I went for more like character comedian actors, you know, rather than like great actors who've played comedy roles. I went for the characters over anything else. We all have our ways.
I want to give one honorable mention, because we didn't talk about him, and he was my number six. Because it's a really hard list to do five. Peter Sellers, he was so close to getting in this list. I mean,
yeah.
Inspector Clouseau, man, I just laughed my ass off as a kid when we used to watch them. They were just fantastic.
Yeah, fair. Another one who I'm surprised didn't actually make your list is another absolute classic. El Groucho, Rufus T. Firefly. Groucho Marx.
Oh, the Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I mean, I thought about the Marx Brothers. I thought about Lauren Hardy and all of that. But I only remember snippets of them. I don't remember full things. And I kind of, that's where my Chaplin card went, because Chaplin was the card for them, because I saw more Chaplin. I remember more Chaplin gags. Whereas them, I remember some of the funny bits, but I haven't seen enough of their stuff to really put them in a top five. That's why they weren't there. As sad as that is to admit, and I hope that will change at some point in the future.
It bloody should. But yeah, they're obvious legends as well. But yeah. Top five. Shum.
Top five. Done. And that leads us into, I wish we had like jingle bells right now, because we know next week is December and that's your pick. And I suppose we're wondering what is going to be your festive selection. If it is a festive selection, I can't presume. I can only guess.
My festive selection is a festive movie which has passed me by. A movie which I decided to do a lot of research going into this one and pick a movie which I haven't seen, and maybe you haven't seen it, but definitely a lot of people probably haven't seen this, because it isn't a Christmas classic in its way. It's an unconventional Christmas movie. It's called The Ref. Have you seen the movie The Ref?
No.
Starring Dennis Leary, Kevin Spacey, Judy Davis. You haven't seen that movie?
I do know the movie. Only because it's on a short list of mine.
There you go. Gives you an excuse to watch it. This seems like this is an unconventional dark comedy movie. And yeah, this is just one that sort of could be an underrated classic, really. I think there's the potential there for that to be the case. We're gonna review that next week. And I thought it would be good to do a Christmas movie that we both haven't seen. You know, there were so many to choose from. I thought, let's pick one that is a little bit different. Also, the name is mental. Don't really get the name.
The Ref.
Yeah, it's called Hostages in other countries, but its main title was The Ref.
I thought he was a referee or something. I thought that's why he was the ref.
No, he's not a referee. But this wasn't a box office smash, but it is a bit of a cult movie now. But yeah, let's give it a go, and we'll review it next week. The Ref, our first of our festive classic.
And what is it on? Did you say what it was?
Oh, sorry, it's Amazon Prime, but you do have to part ways with some cash. It is a £3 rental. To be it.
And can you get that on a Black Friday deal?
Maybe. Ooh. Worth looking.
There we go.
Cyber Monday as well. Don't forget about that.
Yep. Don't forget that.
So yeah, next week, The Ref. And we'll catch you then, I guess. Is there anything else left to say on this episode?
No. Watch The Ref. And Austin Powers.
And any other movie from any of the comedy icons that we spoke about this evening.
But not Bel-Air. Don't watch that.
Don't watch Bel-Air. I don't think anyone will.
Watch The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air if you really need some Bel-Air in your life.
Yeah. They're the take-ons. Don't watch Bel-Air. Don't listen to Nick Fletcher. Watch movies by comedy legends such as Charlie Chaplin and Leslie Nielsen.
And Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, of course. Au revoir.
Goodbye.